strip mining coal on our property.
You are listening to Out There. That clip is from a guy named Patrick Angel from southeastern Kentucky, from a past show that I did. But I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I'm live in the studio today. And that was actually a show off of Automation because I'm late, 5 minutes late. I was actually early, but then I got to the studio and I tried to pull out my thumb drive and I'm like, I left that bag at home. Then I couldn't figure out how to get home because the bike path is closed on my block. Both ends of my block are closed. So I couldn't figure out how to get to or from home. Anyway, that interview that was just playing, I like that. If you want to listen to that, you can listen to the Out There archives. I think that would have been about a year ago. That would have been like, I think, April of 2019 when that show was. So you can go to the Weatherbeard archives at, the Out There archives at weatherbeard.com/out there. So thanks for tuning in today. It is June 30th, the last day of June. And I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM, Northampton. The first clip I have for you today is an interview with David, who I just met yesterday, but he's a couch surfing guest, and we haven't hosted any couch surfing guests since COVID hit, so we were excited to meet him. And so I got a clip from him, and then the main interview I have for today is with Yumi, who's a local children's book illustrator and author, and she's talking about the book she's working on about the Immokalee farm workers. Okay. Hang on. Computer button. Let's try this again.
Hi, I'm David, and I'm from Serbia originally, but I live in California, Los Angeles.
And we're at Monday Night Potluck. David and I just met today via couch surfing. So how long have you been couch surfing?
Well, I've been a member for a while. It's been 10 years, I believe. I think I started in 2010, but I haven't used it a lot. I'm actually kind of rediscovering it since like last summer. I started traveling with my camper SUV, and I'm just trying to meet like interesting people on the road. Uh-huh.
So a lot of the country has had sort of like lockdown kind of stuff, or, you know, stay-at-home orders for COVID for the last few months. Have you been traveling that whole time?
Yeah, that's actually why I started traveling. My restaurant closed down in Los Angeles, and I stayed without the job, so I had to leave and get going. I spent the first month in Las Vegas. I got an Airbnb there. And then after that, I went on the road, went to Denver, spent a week there with my friend, and I kept going. I've been trying to find couch surfers, and it's been really, really hard at the beginning. Uh-huh. A lot of people would cancel on me, like last minute, and not even respond, and advise me not to travel right now. But some people were really encouraging and told me, yeah, you can stay with me as long as you want. So that's why I decided to go on the road. And it's been interesting.
So when you've been staying with people, have you just been staying outside in your car? Or have you ever been staying inside with people?
I stayed inside with people a few times as well in New Orleans, through car surfing in New Orleans and Tampa. I think those are my first stays inside. Uh-huh. When was that? It was like May. Middle of May, I believe. And then I stay with my friends inside of their house. So, But mostly when I'm on my own, I'm just going to national parks, national forests, and car camping. And I've been lucky enough that they're pretty open through the whole pandemic. I was able to find free campgrounds.
Did you do any like quarantine stuff? Or like, how did you, what kind of concerns have you had, or people that you've stayed with had, about transmitting the virus unknowingly?
Yeah. Well, I didn't go to a big gathering. So I basically stayed with like small group of people that I was with. Like when I would hang out with my friends, I would just hang out with them. And when I would couch surf, it was just like with two of us in the house. And so I was avoiding big groups, big gatherings, going to grocery stores. And yeah, I was trying to stay on my own. And whenever I have friends or couch surfers, I would just spend time with them.
Mm-hmm. You were avoiding grocery stores? How did you get food?
I did a lot of... I got into dumpster diving. And I did a lot of dumpster diving, and I found a lot of sources that gives away free food, like Hare Krishna.
Oh, yeah, in New Orleans.
In New Orleans on Sundays, they give free food.
I've been at that meal, yeah.
Yeah, really good stuff. And yeah, when I stay with people, my friends, they have food, they have stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, dumpster diving is working good. That's my main source of food. Mm.
Can you find any free food around here?
In Aldi's.
Wait, Aldi's dumpster.
Don't forget the mulberry tree.
Oh yeah, mulberry, yeah. Where? A lot of berries, yeah, that's the thing.
Where do you get the berries? Where do you get the mulberries?
Just down the street here. What is it by the stairs?
Yeah, up High Street.
Street.
There's a really nice tree.
Nice.
In front of Forsander Apartments.
What?
In front of Forsander Apartments.
Forsander?
Yeah, up on High Street in the corner of High and Kai's.
But the cherries?
Cherries also.
Have you checked out like the Survival Center or like the soup kitchens or things like that?
Not this year. So last summer I did that. I was volunteering in the like soup kitchens and working to get free food.
I don't know what's in Northampton, but Amherst has like a ton of stuff like that.
I think
you can get free meals every day. What?
I think it will be harder right now because of the COVID. I don't know if they're open.
It's actually easier in Amherst, at least.
You think they're giving away?
Yeah, you can go to the Survival Center every day.
Even
they're
now?
Giving away, like free meals, hot meals, cold meals, bags of produce, bags of bread.
I actually
like everything.
Saw that in New York as well, in all over Brooklyn.
They actually have it more streamlined during the virus time.
Wow.
Because more people are going there for food,
but
they do it really fast. It's like you just get a whole bag of this, get a bag of that, get this. Like,
you just want to get people out.
You saw like outside in the parking lot in a tent?
It's all outside. It's very, very well organized and streamlined.
Also, I've been protesting, and there's a lot of free food or the protest. Yeah, and they're built in D.C. Actually, I saw this tent city. Gatlinburg is like one of the most interesting places.
Yeah, tell us about Gatlinburg. We're gonna see Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and the smoke. And there's the Smoky Mountains.
The Smoky Mountains. Yeah, people are so different out there. Like I like the Southern accent and Confederate flag everywhere. And, I just enjoy like sitting on this bench for like 20 minutes and I would listen to people order food like with their accent and eating terrible, like eating unhealthy and like just the way it looks. There's no social distancing, no masks over there. Like they're living life like full speed.
Wow.
So that was really interesting. What else? I discovered boiled peanuts for the first time in my life. Have you ever had that?
Yeah.
Boiled peanuts?
Boiled peanuts are really good.
Sure. Where
super
were they,
tasty.
Tennessee?
And that's a southern thing in South Carolina, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds right. South Carolina, yeah.
That's an interesting thing. Smoky Mountains are beautiful. Blue Ridge Parkway, that's really cool. But people-wise, I don't know if I encounter anyone super unique.
So if your couch surfing guest canceled or hosts canceled or you didn't really have a place to stay, you just park.
Yeah, I would just park. So I think I like parking at the hotels the best right now. Sometimes you even get a free Wi-Fi and you get a lot of free stuff there. Usually, last summer, actually, I would just go park in a hotel. Sometimes I would use their swimming pool. I just walk in. Nobody notices you. If you have confidence to walk in and do something like that, then if you look like a guest.
You like walk into the breakfast buffet. And just
I've done that too. I did. I walk into a breakfast buffet as well. And I got free food. That's another way. But not this summer. I can't do that this summer.
No.
So I'm usually parking at the hotels. And like I have a good setup. It's like stealth camping. Nobody can notice that I'm in the car. Yeah. I don't have any extra.
Yeah, when you talk about going into the hotel, breakfast and swimming pools, I can't help but think about the white privilege. And I mean, I feel like I do so many things with that, too. Yeah. Like so many freedoms, like picking berries anywhere I want,
and
the edges of people's yards, and all kinds of things like that. Yeah.
All definitely. Things that should have happened, Danny.
If you like, look like you fit in, it's easy. And then everything is easy. So, yeah.
So where have you been during the first couple weeks of June, like with all the protests, Black Lives Matter protests and things? How has that been?
I was mostly around Smoky Mountains, spending a lot of time in nature, camping for the first few weeks, and I really, really wanted to be there. I really wanted to be in LA and protest. I saw like my friends going to all these like big protests and speaking up. So yeah, I was waiting for that, and then I ended up, my first protest was in Greenville, I don't know, it's mid-June, I believe. It was really small, but powerful and moving, so, and then I kept going. I went to Asheville, I went to one protest over there, and then when I got to Baltimore and Philly. Hi.
That was an interview with David, my couchsurfing guest of the last few days. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. The interview was from yesterday evening at our Monday night potluck out in the yard. Something that David said not on the interview was that when he was living in L.A., before he got his car, he biked everywhere and then decided that paying $1,200 a month for rent and biking everywhere, well, he didn't want to pay that much for rent, so he decided to buy a car and live out of his car. So that's how the car came to be. Now on Out There. Oh, a song. How about a song? Well, I don't have it queued up. So how about not a song? Whoa. All right, here's Elvis.
Seven lonely days and a dozen times ago, I reached out one night and you were gone. Don't know why you'd run, what you're running to or from. All I know is I want to bring you home. So I'm walking in the rain, thumbing for a ride on this lonely Kentucky back road. I've loved you much too long, my love's too strong to let you go, never knowing what went wrong. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through. With the rain in my shoes, searching for you in the cold Kentucky rain, in the cold Kentucky rain. Showed your photograph to some old gray bearded men sitting on a bench outside a general store. They said, yes, she's been here, but their memory wasn't clear. Was it yesterday? No, wait, the day before. Finally got a ride with a preacher man who asked, were you bound on such a cold, dark afternoon? As we drove on through the rain, as he listened, I explained, and he left me with a prayer that I'd find you. Kentucky rain keeps pouring down, and up ahead's another town that I'll go walking through. With the rain in my shoes, searching for you in the cold Kentucky rain, 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 in the cold Kentucky rain.
Well, speaking of rain, I'm really, really happy for all the rain we've gotten. Now that song, I never really listened closely to that song, but I can't tell, is he stalking her? Like, if she left, does she, he just leave her alone? Or do sometimes people want to be looked for? I guess the listener will have to decide. All right, next on Out There is Interview with Yumi. Nope, I didn't slide that clip over. So this says, toilet paper, ask Mr. Green. What could that be?
It's time to ask Mr. Green from the Sierra Club. Marlis in Port Washington, Wisconsin wonders, my supermarket carries only one brand of toilet tissue with recycled material, and it's produced by a company known for bad forestry practices. Are there environmentally safe brands of TP?
Well, Marlis, Americans spend 400 million miles of TP off the roll every year. If none of it were made from recycled paper, we'd use up the equivalent of 50 million trees. When shopping for any kind of recycled paper, make sure the package indicates what percentage is post-consumer waste. That is paper that's been recycled after somebody actually used it. Otherwise, paper makers can use the word recycled for scraps and trimmings that never even left the mill. A number of big-name brands do contain 20% authentic post-consumer waste, but the highest post-consumer content, 80%, comes from Vermont-based Seventh Generation. Other eco-friendly brands include EcoSoft, Markal, White Swan.
Ask Mr. Green and learn a lot more online at sierraclubradio.org.
Did they say post-consumer toilet paper?
I'm here behind the David Ruggles Society Museum and the studios behind it with Yumi. Thanks for making time today, Yumi.
Thank you.
So we're sitting in the shade on this hot, hot June day. And Yumi has a whole stack of painted pictures in her lap. Can you tell me what you're working on there, Yumi?
Yes, I make children's books on good days. And and you have in your lap one of them, Molly Under the Night Sky, A Lao Story of Home, which I can talk about too. But the one that I'm currently working on is in collaboration with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in South Florida, who are farm workers, mostly tomato pickers, who've been organizing for many years now, for farm worker rights. And actually their model is reproduced all over the country. It's not just tomatoes anymore. But we were invited to work together to make a picture book. And it's been a process, so I was able to visit them and get to know the center and hear some of the history. There was fasting and marching and grassroots organizing. So they have a wonderful... There's actually a Student Farm Worker Alliance that works alongside them and are very clear about the difference between being an ally and not speaking for someone else, and that's been interesting to learn about. And as a storyteller, to bring together everyone's stories, reflect back what we're hearing, and co-authoring this with Diana Cohn, who has written some organizing stories and other children's books where the young heroes look at the challenges in society and find solutions. And that kind of is how I... The books that I've told, mine have usually been groups of people, and that's been what's interesting to me is how many voices tell a story, and that's what the coalition brings. In a lot of their material, they don't have one hero, so they distinguish themselves from West Coast Union organizing stories as not presenting one kind of hero figure, but really decentralizing that. And then in publishing, a lot of times people want to identify with the one hero. But it's never been my experience that anybody does anything all by themselves. Although people do need to stand in leadership positions. And so sometimes those heroes are really a conduit, you know. They know they're not the only ones, but they're willing to be the face of things. So this story doesn't have a name yet, but we're calling it Fair Food Now. And it's really exciting to think about
kids and everybody else who reads books to kids getting a real look at where the food they buy comes from, who's involved in the process, and how those people have organized to have safe working conditions. And that real understanding that when everybody's taken care of, protected in a situation, it's better for everyone. Mm-hmm. So what's that called? There's a word for it.
Mutual benefit, or I don't know.
I think it is. Reciprocity. It comes up in all the work.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
Right. Right. And we really are in this together. I mean, the opposite is true, too. When we ignore any suffering, we all suffer. So,
Diana Cohen, did she write the book about the ducks and the typewriter and the cows on strike?
No, but it came out the same year her book, Si Se Puede, came out. And Si Se Puede is a little boy. It's the janitor strike in L.A.
Yeah.
And it's a little boy whose mother works all night. He stays with his grandmother, and it's their story of him demonstrating he's shy about what his mother does, and he misses her a lot, and he kind of gets his class to come out into the street and demonstrate, and they won in that demonstration.
Yeah.
So,
I came across that book earlier this year in the Springfield Public School that was being demolished, and there was a open to the community to come take whatever you wanted, and that was some of the earlier lower grades, the whole tons of books, and I remember catching that one, and I had to read that one real quick, even as I was going through stuff. Yeah, that's a good look. Cool. So you're doing this collaboration. How long is this book? How do you condense? How are you going to condense this big story into a small kid's book?
That's our struggle right now, because their work is really over more than 25 years, and the early work was about coming together as a coalition and meeting in a church, and the farm workers really figuring out what they wanted and needed, and then there were several marches, and they become more, along with this student farm worker alliance, the students have a big voice all over the country demonstrating, and fast food restaurant Taco Bell was their first campaign, and they won. So it's about, corporate food and lost my train of thought on all these things, but that's what's happening with the book too. So I can tell you the story we currently have, and the pictures that I have in my lap are we're going to make a little video with a Spanish English we're working with a translator, Melody Gonzalez, who's worked with the coalition also, to make a video to send to the coalition, because they're really facing, the COVID is hitting them really hard right now. They've been in the news about it, but it kind of came later and hitting harder, and they are living close together and they're working next to each other. So instead of taking the story down in March, we're sending a movie. But the main reason we're doing all that is to get their feedback on how the story reflects what they've told us so far, and to not tell a story that's not authentic or not what they want to tell.
Yeah.
And so what we have so far is the illustration shows a bus in the early dawn. Headlights are illuminating silhouettes of figures walking towards the bus. You could almost see a palm tree. I'm not sure yet if I'm going to put patterns of weaving patterns in the sky from Guatemala, but I've been researching patterns, and textiles have been something in all my work where it's a storytelling, a way of telling another story inside the story. But the story starts with the mother leaving before the sun rises to go to work, and it's told from the point of view of her daughter. So it introduces that she's going to pick tomatoes, thousands of tomatoes, all day, that will travel around the country. Um,
I love the colors of the moonlight and the shadows. I just want to like look and look and look deeper into and see into the shadows and see what's who's there and what are they doing.
Yeah, I've done lots of different versions. I did pencil sketches, and I didn't bring those out today, but that's the wonder of pictures that can have things to find in them. That's the hope, because you want people to look again and again and realize that there's always more to see that we don't see at first. They're out of order. They're out of order because... we're working on how the story gets told. Mm-hmm. But the next one that I have in my lap is farm workers in a tomato field. It's morning now, daytime. And on the left-hand side, they're filling buckets wrapped to protect from the sun. And
their heads wrapped?
Head wraps and face wraps and baseball caps. And they're picking. And as it moves up to the right, they're loading into a truck. But they're also being yelled at by a couple of people, and one of them is bent over. We're talking about the daughter being aware that things are hard for her mother in the field, but we haven't figured out the way to say it. There's another part where the mother talks more about it.
So what's next after the picture of the people working in the hot sun picking tomatoes with the overseer?
Yeah, this one. She's at school. We wanted to... I think a little bit show that school is work for children, and so we have her at school, but also in this particular story there's a theme of the Statue of Liberty, and I won't reveal the ending, but in this picture at school there's a teacher with a Statue of Liberty poster behind her, and in this case she asks the class to write a poem about freedom, and she... So far, her name is Amalia. She writes about her mother in the form of a bird, a quetzal, coming to Immokalee in search of freedom. And
you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is an interview with Yumi, who lives in Florence and is a children's book author and illustrator, talking about the book she's working on. About the Immokalee farm workers. We're going to come back to the interview in a minute, but I just wanted to take a song break. This is Odetta.
It's a mighty hard road my poor hands have pulled. My poor feet have traveled this hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we roam, through deserts so hot and through mountains so cold. Wandered all over your green growing land, wherever your crops are, I'll lend you my hand. On the edge of your cities, you see me and then I come with the dust and I'm gone. California, Arizona, I've worked on your crops. Then northward up to Oregon to gather your hops. I dug beets from your ground, I've cut grapes from the vine. Set on your table that light sparkling wine. Green pastures aplenty from dry desert ground. From the Grand Coulee Dam where waters run down. every state of this union. Migrants have been, we come with the dust, and we're gone. Till death sets me free, 'cause pastures are plenty, must always be free. Well, I wandered all over your green growing land, where cities you will see me, and then I've come with the dust and I'm gone away.
That was Odetta with Pastures of Plenty, which was written by Woody Guthrie in 1942. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Now I'll go back to the interview with Yumi. Yumi is author, co-author of Pitch Black. That's a graphic novel. She's co-author of that with Anthony Horton. Also author of Molly Under the Night Sky, a Laos story of home. And now she's talking about the children's book she's working on about the Immokalee farm workers.
And the sound of the tomatoes in the bucket, tum, 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 which is from working with the translator. We've been trying to make a poem in both languages that is poetic in both languages, so she and I have been working back and forth with what that would be, and she herself picked tomatoes and had the experience of the tomatoes landing in the bucket and going tum, 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 and it just... It felt like it was part of the story.
The translator was the tomatoes.
Worked at the coalition, and part of her work as an ally and helping the student alliance. I think she was doing undergraduate or graduate work there, interviewing and picked tomatoes in her studies. So this is a page of a little girl reading from her paper, and the image is more abstract behind her of a green bird, green Statue of Liberty, and green tomatoes, because they're picked green and they're hard. The next page is sharing that story with her mother at home and her little brother peeking in. This whole page is standing in for a conversation that they have about what it's really like, and it's unresolved right now what's going to be said here, and there probably will be more pictures as she talks about it, maybe more abstract, possibly about how they've organized and what they're doing going forward, because one of the things they're doing going forward, and this is now the next page, is organizing a march. And this shows the center. It's still sketchy, but they're hammering signs together and painting giant tomatoes that are going to say justice and dignity. And there's one large hand. It's going to say, whose hands picked your food? And then over in the corner, our characters are figuring out what else the farm workers can carry in a march to the Capitol. It was a 243-mile march.
Wow.
And they did build. I'm turning to the next page now. And we love to turn the book because it reminds us that we look at things a different way. So this is rotate the book to the full page of the Statue of Liberty, the farm worker Statue of Liberty. So they really did build this, and it's in the Smithsonian, and it was really heavy. It's papier-mâché and chicken wire and wood. but she's carrying a basket of tomatoes in her arm and holding up a tomato for the light. And they carried it partly on their shoulders when they got to the Capitol, but also in a truck, and it marched the 243 miles. And so that's sort of central to our story, that our creativity and our message, you know, are tied together. This one is just the list of their what the signs are going to say. In the other picture, which I also have long, there's the, it's, you know, hundreds of people and the statue and the march, and the signs are going to say, got food, thank a farm worker, justice for tomato pickers, slavery in the supply chain, support fair wages, fair food, justicia, respeto, la comida justo, justice for farm workers, dignidad, whose hands picked your food, etc. So that's going to go all through the pages. Raise the wage. And actually, there's going to be one for the tomato rabbis, who were central to this book starting. I think originally they reached out to Diana, who then went to Immokalee, and kind of everybody working together. But there are some very active tomato rabbis teaching and trying to influence some of the corporate people who can make decisions about spending money differently.
What makes a tomato rabbi a tomato rabbi?
They're fighting for tomato rights, for farm workers' rights, in this case, the tomato pickers.
Mm-hmm.
And they called themselves tomato rabbis. They went out and protested and held the tomatoes, and also used their influence where they could on the other side of it. Because what I haven't said, and the last picture I have is Amalia with the megaphone. But it's not the end of the story. There are buyers in between the corporate, in between the fast food restaurants and the grocery stores, there are the buyers. And so the coalition, what was radical for the coalition, was influencing consumers to support boycotting fast food chains and grocery stores, which then influence the buyers not, you know, to sign a fair food agreement. Mm-hmm. And so they would be accountable in the field, and they didn't have shelter from the sun when they're working, or breaks, or water. And the part about slavery in the supply chain, the coalition actually made a traveling museum about slavery in the fields. And until even recently, people were trapped in immigrant working situations where they even like locked into trailers and then brought out to work, and just the worst conditions possible. So it's not lightly that those conditions are still going on.
Yeah.
So how to put that all in a children's book is what we try to do.
So when did you go down there?
I was last there two or three times. It started in 2017, and it's been a couple of, when I was in Miami, I could drive up. I have family in Miami, and I grew up there, and it's one reason I'm also attached to the story, is I feel like it's part of where I'm from. So I just really wanted to attempt to paint the light. It may not be in this style at all. It's interesting as a process. This is acrylic on paper, and it kind of comes from my mural background of just being an untrained paint a story. I guess it, you know, narrative pictures that you can kind of teach from, learn from. But it could become more abstract and playful. It depends. Most of my last works, humor is so important in telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to learn how my work can have humor, which sometimes it does. Usually it's like a bird that comes into the picture or something. But it needs to be inside the strength of humor in connecting people and deflating egos is really wonderful. And so what we have now, we're going to make a video of and work with the translator and then get the feedback. And hopefully we'll also get some of those sparks that we can laugh at ourselves and move forward. So all this work has been possible besides the support of my family and community, but mainly by a grant that was able to fund the trips to Immokalee. And there's an organization called Independent Arts and Media,
And they are fiscal sponsors for artists trying to have different ways of getting messages out there. Uh-huh. So the independent arts and media has a lot of support. And they're mostly on the West Coast, but they do a few things out here.
Yeah. Who else in your family?
Who else in my family? We are. It's a big family if I keep going. But in our immediate family, there's Hai, who helps get books to the world with his knowledge of technology and accessible book reading. So for blind and low vision people, he's been working to get accessible books to people. And he's my partner. And we actually met here in Northampton at Kat and Charlotte's wedding, which they feel like family too. And we have two children, Song and Tao, who maybe had their voices on for some interview in the past. And they are 7 and 9. And
You said that Immokalee Workers have a radio station that you stream?
Yes. I've been streaming. They stream it. I listen while I'm painting. And it's 107.7 FM La Tuya. Radio Consciencia, or the conscience. And anybody can stream it.
You look it up online?
Yeah, you can find it online. And I think probably the easiest way to find it is Coalition of Immokalee Farm Worker Radio Streaming.
That was an interview with Yumi, local children's book author, illustrator, maybe beyond children's book, because the Pitch Black was more like a graphic novel for adults or kids, both, not really sure, but that was a great book. Also author of Molly Under the Night Sky, a Laos story of home, and she's working on this current book about the Immokalee farm workers. So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Yumi mentioned Radio Consciencia, La Tuya, and so I looked it up.
La pausa, Rosalba, antes quiero subrayar de que lo que acabas de comentarnos en esta última parte de tu comentario.
I was hoping to get music, but I guess it's kind of like getting close to the news hour, maybe. Anyway, I'm looking at the website and it's streaming, but last time when I tuned in, they were playing music, Spanish music, Spanish language music. All right, so I will play this song.
No work, give me tips. We just took for granted all those times we skinny dipped. Netflix, no more baseball games. We gotta stay 6 feet apart, gonna go insane. This is dumb, if you ask me. To keep a group to 10 or less ain't done so easily. Can't go out just to the store. Can't shake our bodies to the music like we did before.
There was. We don't have to take our masks off. I was listening to the news this morning about the resurgence of corona. That was produced by Nigel Holland and Francisco Fattoruso, featuring Cleveland P. Jones. And time for a public service announcement. Actually, this whole show is kind of public service announcements sometimes. If you haven't been downtown in Northampton in the last week, well, the Public Arts Festival has been kicked off, has been in action, and what they're doing for it now with the virus and social distancing and stuff is that artists have been painting cement barriers on Main Street, Strong Avenue, and Market Street. Barriers that are where people are having outdoor dining. But you don't have to go outdoor dining to enjoy the art. You can just cruise on through. And, also I wanted to mention this a four-week seminar coming up called White Supremacy in the Age of Trump. Like all the seminars and meeting things nowadays, it's an online thing. But this is. It's 4 weeks in the month of July. It's White Supremacy in the Age of Trump with Loretta Ross. This four-week seminar will analyze the historical and current manifestations of the white supremacist movement by examining ideological components, tactics, and strategies, and its relationship to mainstream politics. Wow, that was a lot of multi-syllable words. We will also discuss the relationship between white supremacy and white privilege through liberal and conservative writers and explore how to build a human rights movement to counter the white supremacist movement in the United States. To find more information, where can you find more information? I got this forwarded to me from one of my coworkers through the UMass something. I'm trying to figure out where to find out about it. Well, if you look up White Supremacy in the Age of Trump with Loretta Ross, I bet you'll find it. It's the date and time, July 6th, July 13th, July 20th, and July 27th. Those are, hang on, let me get up here and look at the calendar. July 6th, those are Mondays. Monday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m. Sounds like a great series. The cost is $5 or as much as you can pay because the revolution will be funded by the people. The more we get, the more we can invest in making this course the best it can be. Also, I know Western Mass Surge is holding dialogue circles. Also in July, one evening a month via Zoom. If you go to the Western Mass Surge, that is S-U-R-J, Showing Up for Racial Justice, go to the website or Facebook page. I'm sure you can find information about that. And stay tuned for Madness Radio coming up at 4 o'clock. And, I guess I should play another song. I don't know. This one was going through my head today, so I'll play it. Kathy Malua. It's going through my head very slowly.
It's a thing we can't deny, like the fact that I will love you till I die. We are 12 billion light years from the edge. That's a guess. No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you. I'm warm by the fire of your love every day. So don't call me a liar, just believe everything that I say. There are 6 billion people in the world, more or less, and it makes me feel quite small. The the love that you give me every night. There are 9 million bicycles in Beijing. That's a fact. It's a thing we can't deny, like the fact that I will love you till I die. You know that I will love you till I die.
I found a boy today.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para.